Brigadier Taylor, Reel 1. When was it that you went to Korea, Brigadier Taylor?
I was given command of the 28th Brigade in the British Division in Hong Kong in 1949. So I went out there. And we were on the frontiers of the new territories. There were two brigades up. At that time, there was a threat from the Chinese. And the brigade consisted of the King's Own Scottish Borders, King's Shropshire Light Infantry, and the South Staffordshire. We were working on defences and also training, and we trained very, very hard because we thought we might be at war any moment. Then the war in Korea broke out, and we moved up in April 1951 to take over from the added to the British strength there.
So you sailed from Hong Kong to Busan?
That's right. We sailed and then moved up in the line.
When you arrived at Busan, what was the scene that greeted you there? Was there much devastation?
No. I was, one of my impressions, I met the Van Fleet, the American commander in chief, and I had a few words with him. And then I flew up to the front line area.
Can you recollect what Van Fleet said to you?
Yes, he talked about the war and the good quality of the British troops. It's rather amusing. He talked about the white man's burden, which I thought was slightly comic, but never mind. Old-fashioned.
Did he say what he admired in particular about the British troops?
Well, I can't remember now, but that was a long time ago, of course. I'd like to try and follow this here, which is already written down.
Certainly.
The actual brigade came into existence, the British Commonwealth Brigade, the 28th Brigade, under my command, and consisted of the following units: the 1st Middlesex, the 1st King's Own Scottish Borders, the 3rd Royal Australian Regiment, and the 2nd Prince's Patch, Canadian Light Infantry, and the 16th Field Ambulance, Royal New Zealand Artillery, and the 16th Field Regiment. Correction. 60th Field Ambulance and the 16th Field Regiment Royal Artillery. The Borders had only just arrived in Korea, and though they were able to play a valuable role in the first 10 weeks, they were not fully operational because the majority of their stores were standing in crates on the docks at Incheon. Everyone had hoped for a quiet period in which to effect the relief of the 1st Argyll Southern Highlanders and the 1st Middlesex. And for this purpose, the other brigade, the 27th Brigade, was in reserve. It had been in reserve for 3 days, having been relieved in the line by the 6th ROC, Korean Division.
ROC is Republic of Korea.
That's right. When suddenly the full weight of the mighty Chinese spring offensive was launched against the entire United States lines, United Nations lines, rather. Further, their main thrust was directed at a place where the two British brigades could play a most prominent part in the ensuing battle. This was at last light on Sunday, the 22nd of April. And by noon the following day, the 6th Rock Division to our immediate front was withdrawing in some confusion. At this point, Brigadier Burke, DSO, commanding the 27th Brigade, had ordered the Canadians, Lieutenant Colonel Stone, DSO MC, and the Australians, Lieutenant Colonel Ferguson, DSO MC, to block the northern end of the valley, through which the South Koreans would eventually withdraw. These two battalions had barely established themselves when it became apparent that the withdrawal of our allies was completely out of hand, as they flooded through our positions. They had been routed. And it had not been for the prompt action of Lieutenant Colonel Moody, the CO of the New Zealand Field Regiment, who were in our support in a long stop position, we would have been lost. The 3rd Royal Australians then engaged the enemy as infiltrating the fleeing Koreans. This infiltration even reached the reserve battalion area held by the 1st Middlesex, but they penetrated no further. By first light on the 24th of April, the main body of the enemy had withdrawn itself into positions and massed attacks were launched on the 3rd Royal Australians. These continued until 1500 hours that afternoon. At one period, their headquarters were surrounded. However, communications were again established, and the infiltration was cleared up with the assistance of one company of the Middlesex, who counterattacked, and A Company, 72nd U.S. Tank Battalion, which was under our command, under our Lieutenant Koch, spelled K-O-C-H, a most gallant American officer, who later evacuated many Australian casualties on his tanks. But by now, the decision had been taken to withdraw the 3rd Royal Australians behind the 1st Middlesex, thereby eliminating the salient in the brigade line. This withdrawal took place at last light and was successfully completed by midnight, despite the enemy's rapid follow-up. Throughout the night, the 24th and 25th, the Princess Pat's Light Infantry, Canadian Light Infantry, were under attack from the front and from the left flanks, but they decisively repulsed the enemy when, after being particularly overrun, they brought down defensive fire repeatedly on their own well-dug-in positions. This operation, which might well be in mind, caused the Canadians limited casualties only from our own artillery fire, but doubtless saved the situation. In the morning, the wounded were evacuated by helicopter, and supplies and ammunition flown in. The enemy so far had suffered very heavy losses. The New Zealand gunners had fired 10,000 rounds, of which 75% had been observed shooting. And it was not surprising to find that the enemy had been stopped dead in his track, so his assault was diverted to the unprotected flank of the 24th United States Division, some 18,000 yards on our left. The flight of the 6th Rock Division had stripped the right flank of the American division, and the enemy was quick to react. In order to divert the Chinese from their purposes, the 5th U.S. Cavalry, consisting of 3 infantry battalions and 2 artillery regiments, was placed under my command, in order to counterattack through our positions. Thus, I had a small division. By now, the relief of the Argyle and Southern Highlands by the 1st KSB had been completed. And as from midnight, the 25th of April, I took over command, and the designation was changed to 28th Commonwealth Brigade. The borders were now close perimeter defence of brigade headquarters. By noon on the 26th of April, the situation on the left had deteriorated. The 24th Brigade Division of the United States was being forced to give ground, and our line of communication, which ran diagonally south-west through a series of defiles, was under very real threat from the diverted and renewed Chinese attack. The 5th Cavalry, therefore, I was ordered the 5th Cavalry to withdraw from the positions with the 28th Brigade held and to withdraw at 600 hours on the 27th. Meanwhile, 28th Brigade was to provide flank and rear guard on the high ground overlooking the line of communications in the west. This was brought about, in fact, by the arrival of General Van Fleet, And he heard the situation about the Americans on our left being penetrated to some extent, and the danger to our lines of communication. And I said to him, "General, Wellington once said, test of generalship is to know whether to retreat or not." And some hours later, we got the order to pull back.
How reluctant did he seem to be?
Oh, he wasn't. He didn't make any remark at all. He said he didn't. He obviously must have considered it, because I presume it may have influenced him in his decision a few hours later. By nightfall, the battalion was in position, and throughout the night, there was no significant contact on our front or on the front of the 5th Cavalry. Proceeded to withdraw in good order at first light. As their tail passed the command post of 1st KSB, Lieutenant Colonel MacDonald, OBE, gave the order for his platoons to withdraw, to pull in their horns, and gradually the borders came filing down from the high ground, embossed, and drove southwest for 20,000 yards to take up positions around Hill 227. Where their role was to block the Kum Chan Valley, K-U-U-N, capital C-H-O-N Valley. Behind them came the 1st Middlesex, who joined the traffic and proceeded to their new positions, in which they could effectively hold the approach of enemy attack down the Puckan Valley.
How do you spell Puckan?
P-K-H-A-N. This new position had been taken up as a result of a reconnaissance I carried out by aircraft. I flew back for several miles, had a good look at the ground, decided on the position, flew back again to the brigade headquarters, where we held an O group, and I gave out the orders. It was now about 1,500 hours, and the Canadians and the 3rd Royal Australians were still holding the high ground above the line of communication. They too had yet to withdraw and establish themselves in their new positions, so time became a most important factor. Fortunately, the enemy had been somewhat slow to follow up our withdrawal, but even so, the forward observation officers, Royal Artillery, with the Canadians, were already calling down fire on the first ant-like groups of Chinese as it peered over the hills. The withdrawal continued like clockwork, and it was indeed heartening to see the splendid diggers piling on down from the hills in the pouring rain. They had been fighting for 4 days and continually scaling heights in the most inaccessible country, yet their morale was inspiring as they trooped past loaded with belts of ammunition, heavy weapons, musical instruments, and the inevitable sooty brew can.
Inevitable what?
Sooty brew can.
What's that?
You know, the Aussies have a sort of, you know, can to brew up tea.
Like a Dixie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But indeed, all the troops of the brigade had behaved in a calm and disciplined manner, which is so essential in a withdrawal. At one point, when the tough border Scots had marched past Major General Bryan, commanding the 24th Division in column of platoons, he was heard to say to the brigade, to me, having seen some of your men, I have no fears about the flank. By 1700 hours, all the troops had vacated the high ground and were embossed, ready to move after their new blocking positions, which would now have to be occupied in darkness and in rain. The rear guard, reduced to 2 troops of tanks under Lieutenant Cock, United States Army, were located in the Chung Chung and Kapyong, K-P-Y-O-N-G Valley. They had the unpleasant prospect of withdrawing in the dark along 12,000 yards of tortuous and muddy roads. But this they did, and were able to achieve without mishap. Again, the enemy was unable to cope with the speed of mechanized war, and he failed miserably to follow up his advantages. by 0300 hours, by 0030 hours, I'm sorry, 0030 hours, on the 28th of April, we received orders to withdraw into Corps Reserve at Yangping, under the orders of the United States 24th Division. This entailed another full-scale brigade withdrawal, which took place that day. Again, the infantry had to vacate the positions which they had occupied and fortified in the darkness of the night before. And a withdrawal is a demoralizing operation at the best of times. But throughout this operation, the troops were in very good heart and had immense confidence in themselves. It had been raining steadily for 2 days, and this precluded any air support. However, the gunners were able to fire a surplus of ammunition amounting to some 1,800 rounds of high explosive into the advancing enemy. At this stage, there was a serious lack of transport, and 16,000 gallons of petrol, which had been dumped forward of the Middlesex positions by the cavalry, had to be destroyed, because backloading could not be carried out. The 1st King's Own Scottish Wars were forced to destroy their sea kit bags and certain items of regimental stores. 10 good sets of pipers were saved. They were going to burn them. When I stopped it, I thought that was unnecessary. We could find room for them. They were going to burn their pipes and kilts. Nevertheless, the brigade arrived in its new locations by 2100 hours that night, having carried out 2 major withdrawals with great precision and steadiness. For only 57 hours, we were then allowed to relax before we were again ordered to move at 600 hours on the 1st of May. Throughout the operations up to this date, the infantry had undergone a most testing time in adverse weather over difficult ground. However, they had reacted well up to the best standards of our army and well backed up by the supporting arms. The continuous and accurate fire of the 16th Field Regiment, Royal New Zealand Artillery, had been a major factor in the success of the operations. And the capable 60th Indian Field Ambulance under Lieutenant Colonel Rangaraji, R-A-N-G-A-R-A-J, had inspired the confidence of all ranks. Some time later, when the full story was told, the Australian Canadian battalions, an A Company of 72 Tank Battalion, United States, received the Presidential Citation of the United States of America, a great honor indeed. Yes. The initial enemy onslaught had now spent itself, but the enemy was gathering himself for the second phase. Therefore, the United Nations commanders had decided to let the massed enemy infantry throw themselves against prepared positions at a killing ground of our own choosing. Consequently, having withdrawn well out of a real contract, we were able to establish a new line over suitable ground, and which was sensed and with some time at our disposal. Our brigade, under the command of the 24th Division, was ordered to defend the left of the area enclosed between the Ham.
Sorry?
In the area enclosed between the Ham, H-A-N, and Puckham, P-U-K-H-A-M, rivers. I then, after an aerial reconnaissance and subsequent appreciation of the overall situation, then issued the following order of the day. British Commonwealth Brigade has been given the most important job in the big battle of Seoul. We are to hold the high ground to the east of the city. As long as this is held, the enemy cannot break into Seoul from the north-east. On our right, in reserve, will be troops of the 24th Division. General Van Fleet has decided to destroy the enemy on ground of his own choosing. In our strong positions, we can hold on for weeks. In similar positions, the Italians at Keren kept at bay 2 crack British and Indian divisions for a long time. Don't forget concealment and surprise, and work like beavers to strengthen our positions. As men and soldiers, we have the full measure of our ant-like opponents. The menace of the urgent hour is upon us. I am confident that we will not fail. Now is the time for leadership and guts. Signed, Brigadier Taylor. For the next 10 days, the preparations of defences and overhead cover was given top priority. At the same time, all units within the brigade carried out aggressive patrolling on a large scale. We made extensive use of barbed wire, trip flares, mines, booby traps and burning barrel devices. Battalions were wired in companies and platoons and even section posts. In many parts, the wire was 70 yards deep, strung loosely at knee height. The Americans on our right still showed a preference for neat lines of wiring, which later proved somewhat inadequate against the amassed infantry tactics. Suddenly, on the 11th of May, United States Corps Commander General Hodge, this general played a prominent part in the fighting in the last months of the war in Northwest Europe, issued plans for an advance which was to begin at 0700 hours. This was more than unexpected, but shortly afterwards the Corps postponed the operation, announcing no move today. Meanwhile, commanding officers had made use of the respite to fly air reconnaissances of the ground which the brigade was to secure. Again at 1100 hours, the Corps announced that the projected move was postponed indefinitely. This rapid change of orders had puzzled everyone. However, General Van Fleet, the 8th Army commander, honoured us with a visit next day, and he announced that he had postponed his advance because a full-scale assault by the Chinese Communist forces could be expected within a few days. He again reiterated that he was determined to meet such an attack on our own killing ground rather than in hastily prepared positions, which would have been the case if the plan to advance had been executed. As a result of this forecast, the work on defences was intensified and patrols were stepped up to give early warning of any pending Chinese attack. At this point, the 1st King Shropshire Light Infantry, Lieutenant Colonel A. Shaw Ball, DSO, arrived in Korea and took over the reserve position of the 3rd Royal Australians, while the Royal Australians occupied the defences positions of the 1st Middlesex, who were now homeward bound, or to Hong Kong, anyway. On the 17th of May, our intelligence reported the first large-scale enemy movement. By dusk, over 6,000 had been sighted moving south, and now they were already within striking distance of the divisional right flank. That's the American right flank. That night, 19th U.S. Division on our immediate right was subject to a strong probing attack in battalion strength, and they compelled to give some ground, which was immediately reoccupied at first light. Previously, I had mentioned the American system of wiring, apropos, it is very interesting to note that their four war defended localities of two battalions in the 19th Infantry Brigade were actually overrun. In the case of the 3rd Battalion, they had found the ground unsuitable for the normal concertina and double apron method of wiring. They admitted later on that the more in desperation than anything else, they had spread the wire haphazardly in great quantities through the thick undergrowth. That night, they had a great kill. At one period, everyone, including the battalion commander, enjoyed great sport, throwing some 100 grenades at the hopelessly entangled enemy. Later, this episode became the source of much friendly leg pulling, and I arranged a demonstration of our method of wiring, which the regimental commander ordered his battalion representative to attend. Patrolling the next day, the King's and Scottish borders ran into a group of enemy approximately 200 strong, and having accounted for 10 of them, our patrol withdrew unscathed. Another group of 100 enemy reported in the front of the Canadians, and these were engaged by our artillery. Throughout this period, an armoured task force with the infantry of the King Shropshire Light Infantry operated daily from our left flank. This, by day, combined with a heavy harassing fire on our artillery, mortars and machine guns, helped to prevent the enemy from closing into our positions in any strength. Apart from the strong probing attack on the 19th U.S. Infantry Regiment, and lesser one which might that night following, the division as a whole had not undergone an attack as severely as we had expected. Further to the east, the Chinese had struck hard, and already the 7th Rock Division, Koreans, had been declared non-operation due to enemy action and heavy casualties. The 2nd United States Division were under heavy attack, and the situation was worsening. At about 1,000 hours, therefore, on the 19th of May, the Corps announced that the original plan to attack would be put into operation as a general offensive calculated to relieve the pressure to the east. Now, the brigades, all set for defense, had to mount a hurried attack, probably the most difficult operation of war. In retrospect, a good picture of the enemy in retreat is provided by the action of the brigade front from the 21st to the 24th of May. The brigade advance on the left flank of the 24th Division, moving north and northwest from a fixed line of defences into the country of undulating plains, punctuated by high features on the right of the line and following after 6,000 metres by steep hills rising 400 metres plus on the left of the line and 800 metres on the right. Vigorous tank and infantry patrols moved into the left area of the plain during the first day and encountered spirited opposition from groups of enemy up to 100 strong and variously armed, that's obviously company strength. Mines indiscriminately laid along the crown and shoulders of the hills were met with on the lateral road, demarking also the plain and a higher massive. The two main features, 590 and 486 metres, presented a problem because of general lack of information. I decided to push forward battle patrols as a preliminary. They all did very well, and the Australians secured 509 without opposition. A fine patrol by the King's Own Scottish Order, led by Lieutenant Innes, actually reached the top of 486 in the morning mist and surprised the Chinese, who were about to have breakfast. The feature was strongly held there, and the patrol withdrew, its task accomplished. Meanwhile, the 1st KSLI were moving up from the southwest over some small hill feature. They then assaulted 486 with two companies up in a pincer movement, covered by artillery, 4.2 mortars, and even an airstrike. The 3rd Royal Australians were already established on 590, gave excellent support with mortar and machine gun fire. The cooperation of units was very good. By 1600, the light infantry was established on the hill, and though the enemy soon counterattacked, he was repulsed. The enemy fought very well, but the well-trained companies of the King's Own Shropshire Light Infantry were too much for him.